Excellent. An ale for me. And for my officers. In fact, ales for everyone.
Oh. Turn backwards. Rick and work. And Will. Sometimes stammer.
Oh, yes.
Hello and welcome to Ten Backward, a Star Trek podcast based in the UK. My name is Will Turland. To the left of me, we have special guest Rob Chapman.
Hello.
Right in front of me, we have special guest Kevin...
Stanley.
Yes.
Good evening.
We were just joking about getting people's names wrong, so I didn't quite get your name wrong, I just forgot. 50%.
50% still very good.
Right in front of me is Rick Palmer.
Hey, hey.
And to the right of me is Rick Everson.
Good evening.
And we've just finished our second day of Destination Star Trek in Birmingham, and we just thought we'd do just a bit of a quick recording to talk about what happened. Does anyone want to talk about? Should start with. Highlights of the day, maybe?
I got my William Shatner autograph in pretty early on. I saw,
saw
the queue was pretty low, and I went for it. And echoing what happened, I think with you, Will, in terms of someone in front of you, the person in front of me gave William Shatner about 20 photographs to sign. And I was genuinely worried that it might tire William Shatner out and he might need a break just before I got to him. Or even worse. But luckily, it's fine. So that was a definite early morning highlight. I remember that you got in and got it done quickly.
It's
definitely a top tip for Destination Star Trek is that if you see someone and the queue's pretty short, don't get in there.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think it's fair to say today was really busy, wasn't
yes,
it? I mean, busy. I guess it was always going to be the case. It's the sort of middle day of the weekend, but... But yeah, big difference to Friday.
One of my highlights, I think, was Marina Sirtis's incredible attempts to evade Will.
Yeah,
she'd just been avoiding me every time he went for an autograph.
She did. Yeah, I spent ages hanging around at the end of a queue and being told I couldn't join that queue because Marina Sirtis wasn't here yet, and to come back in 5 or 10 minutes, and then I'd do that, and then she still wouldn't be there. But yeah, I did eventually get to meet her, and it was great. And I told her that I thought it was really unfair that she often gets kind of teased about how Troy crashes the Enterprise in Generations. And I said, I think it's unfair because, you know, it was a controlled landing in a very difficult situation. Mm. And she said, thank you very much. You're a kind man. And she shook my hand.
Oh, that's cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah. It is difficult because it's only the saucer, right?
Yeah.
What kind of guiding thrust does the saucer have?
Exactly.
It had been damaged, you know.
Mm-hmm. We never see any other characters in Star Trek crash land a saucer section of a starship. So what are we comparing it against?
Exactly. It was unfortunate. I don't think anyone could have salvaged that situation.
And then I just remembered, and she said to me, "And no one died."
Yes.
And I was like, "Yeah, okay, it's a good point."
Yeah, it's like trying to control a big frisbee.
Yeah.
when Tom Paris crashes Voyager in Timeless, kills everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No one gives him a hassle about that.
And he was
Harry Kim wiped that timeline out.
He was meant to be a great pilot as well, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, killed everyone. One idiot. I think meeting Marina Sirtis today is one of my highlights, definitely. How about you, Rob? What was your best thing?
Oh, you know, the best thing, there's lots. Getting to ask Una McCormack and James Swallow, two Star Trek authors, a question on the Excelsior stage, that was quite cool. And then getting them to autograph some books afterwards and having a chat with Una McCormack, she was really cool. That was really good. Seeing Quark in full Ferengi makeup was really, really good.
Mm.
And they brought over his makeup artist that was used in DS9. So it was just like you saw it on the show. That was really, really good. And again, meeting lots of people that I've interacted with on Twitter. Yeah, it's really good. But like you've all said, there was a noticeable difference between Friday and Saturday. It's much, much busier.
Yeah.
It can be a little bit overwhelming, I think. You think you're in an environment where you're probably surrounded by the people that get why you're into Star Trek the most, but it took me a little while to kind of realise that I just go up to someone and say hello and ask if it's okay to get a photo taken with them.
Mm.
And then after that, it was fine.
Yeah, once you've done it once or twice, it's just doing that.
Yeah, it's just, I think it's kind of, it's an unnatural thing because it isn't something you generally do in day-to-day life. So
no,
it takes
I
a bit of courage
to go up to people and say,
can I get a photo with
a complete stranger?
If you're in nothing of high school, you do that. You're probably going to get punched or arrested.
Kev, you had press access. What was that like?
Well, a privilege. I have had press access once before at Destination Star Trek 2016, and again this time. It's so difficult to talk about this without sounding like you're big-headed or something. I don't like it. It feels wrong. I got to interview some really nice people when their queues were low. I popped in there. There were people you might not necessarily think were big stars. You know, Alice Krieger. She played the Borg Queen. You guys know that.
Yeah.
Stephen Rankin. He played numerous roles. Vaughn Armstrong. Numerous roles again, somewhat Trek royalty, really, that guy, you know. I spoke to the guy who played Connor from Discovery.
Yes.
His name is Sam.
Sam Bartholomeus.
That's
he's just a young lad. He's a jobbing actor. He's from New York. He clearly wants to get out there and get more jobs. This was obviously a big break for him, but maybe, you know, he got killed off, twice in the first season there?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, it'd be good to see him on our TV screens again, I'm sure, or something else, you know, but...
Are you writing from the point... When you write, are you writing for people that are Star Trek fans?
I'm writing for you guys. I'm writing for anyone who wants to read about Star Trek. I'm a genuine Star Trek fan. You know, I've got a bit of knowledge. I'm not encyclopedia, maybe like you guys, but I'm certainly on the way to it. I love Star Trek, and going to these conventions, they've been absolutely fantastic. I said to Kitty Swink, Armin Shinmin's wife, the highlight of my 2016, which was a tough year for me, was meeting her and Armin.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I barely knew she was in Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
But speaking to her, just a lovely lady, you know. And that's what they are. These people are real people. They're nice people. You can go up and speak to them. Okay, it's probably quite brief, but they're not going to turn you away. They're not going to be rude, and they've all got a real family thing going on across each different iteration of Star Trek. You know, Marina Sirtis knows Kitty Swink really well. They've worked together on a program called Riley Para. You know, a lot of these people know each other across the Trek iterations. You know, so it really is, as they've said in the Deep Space Nine documentary. It's the Star Trek family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's just nice, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And that's it's good that you brought that up, because we did all get to go to the premiere of the Deep Space Nine documentary. What We Left Behind.
We did, which was fantastic.
Yeah, it was great, and me and Rick weren't going to go originally, but we kind of managed to. Rob very kindly donated a ticket to us.
Yeah, it was thanks to Rob's largesse that we were inspired to go. Well, hey, we split. That means it's cheaper.
Yeah, we could split the cost of two tickets then between three, and then we could do it. So we did, and it was great. And
it was amazing.
So they did say at the beginning that it was introduced by Ira Stephen Bear.
Yeah, they had quite a number of the cast come up on stage as well.
Yeah,
Great.
You're on there, Rob.
Yeah, sorry, there's a lamp in the way.
For those of you not in the future viewing on the holiday, Rob is apparently fighting with the fancy lamp in our rented accommodation.
It's just a pastime I have.
It reminds me of the Martians from the George Powell War of the Worlds. Like he's got like a, it's a bit alien-esque.
Tripod thing going on.
But anyway, yes. So we were asked not to disclose any spoilers for the film.
Yeah. So listeners, you don't do that either.
Yeah.
So.
But they kind of said, you know, tell people that you saw it and you liked it,
which we can do because we did see it and we did like it.
Yeah.
But we can't tell you all the other little bits, like the, you know, the bit where Bashir and Nod got married.
Oh, really?
Oh, what have I done?
That's all right. I'll let it out.
The bits that we can't really talk about, or shouldn't at least, is that they talk about what would have happened if Deep Space Nine came back for season 8. Now, I knew that this was being talked about, but I originally thought that it would be a season 8 that just carried on the next year after season 7. So if they hadn't decided to finish it at season 7.
But
it's not, is it?
Well.
Now,
yeah.
I mean, let's just say it's season 8 would be now. That's not as
important. Yeah. So the idea is they, you know, some of the writers spitball some ideas around on what the show would be like if it came back now this year, and how it would with basically a sort of 20-year gap in the story, and it's fascinating.
It's fantastic to see what the writers would have thought of in this day and age, and what they would, you know, we can't tell you any of the details, but I don't think it's a massive spoiler to say that it's a whole sequence that just shows the immense love and affection that these writers have for their show and for each other and the cast and the whole process, really.
And it was a real highlight of the documentary for me, because it's something quite different. You don't often see that in sort of retrospective documentaries about TV show, because it was a retrospective, but then a kind of, I don't know, a current perspective, as they're sort of looking at how the show would be.
Yeah, it's something quite different and well done.
Yeah.
Maybe it feels like it was a film that was made because it's sort of, was made at the right time, I guess. It's the sentiment was always there, but perhaps for one reason or another, this kind of thing didn't get made. Because it was David Zappone that had the idea. He talked to Ira Stephen Bear about it about 6 years ago. And what what I got from it was that not a lot of it was really surprising. A lot of it just felt like you were getting more information about something that you sort of knew, and so nothing about the show was overly shocking. Some of the insights of the actors, that's just something that you don't know, because you know you don't have that intimacy with the show. But in general, DS9 deserves that recognition, I think.
Yeah,
and they chose the right people to make that film.
Yeah, I mean, it ticked a lot of boxes. I think it was, you know, it was funny and it was entertaining, but it was also, you know, some heartfelt moments there. And there was some really nice sort of detail that diehard fans would get, like references to particular episodes that we've talked about a lot on Ten Backward, actually. That they kind of directly reference. There's a great, I mean, It's not really a spoiler to say that the film sort of continues, like, even into the credits. It's kind of a jam-packed documentary, and it felt like, even as the credits roll, they're still trying to sort of cram in just a bit more sort of insight and humour. Yeah. It was, it's one of the most entertaining Star Trek documentaries that I've seen, I think. It was like, there wasn't really a dull moment.
And they also include some scenes that have been upgraded into HD, which just looked amazing. Absolutely stunning.
I had mixed feelings about that, because it looked great, but it just made me a bit sad that we're probably never going to see a full HD remaster of all of DS9. It was like, I don't know, it was like if you've cooked yourself a lovely pizza, but all you're allowed to do is just have a little slice of pepperoni off the top, and then that's it. Put the rest in the bin. Forget about it.
It's the bullseye equivalent of showing you the caravan, what you could have won. Yeah, it goes away.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? That reminds me. We've left a pizza in the oven. We should probably check that it's not burning, shouldn't we? Oh, thanks, Rob. Just an insight into the goings on in the background of the world of Ten Backwards
Midnight Feast.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. Basically, haven't got time to do a podcast and have our dinner and then go to bed at a reasonable time. So we're trying to do everything.
Yeah, and we've not really eaten properly today because we've been too busy trekking it up.
Yeah.
I think one of the highlights of the film for me was seeing Andrew Robinson almost playing himself, but also playing a touch of Garrick. And kind of, he introduced the film, didn't he? I suppose you would say.
There's some nice touch. It was a very well done way about the Andrew Robinson channeling some Garrick out there.
Because you felt like you were kind of getting new Garrick material at times, which was cool. It was always like you sort of got to see that character again, just a little bit. Really cool.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, any other
how's the pizza doing?
The pizza has approximately 2 minutes left.
Cool.
I'll second what Rob said. It was great to meet a bunch of people off Twitter. Saw Dr. Jen, who has often said kind things about our podcast.
Mm.
She gave me one of her little cross-stitched keyring things. I got to choose Commander Riker one, which I'm delighted with. Rob and myself were very fortunate enough to go and join in a session of Primitive Culture, Trek FM podcast, which was a lot of fun to go and do. So it was nice to also go and meet some other guys. Mm-hmm. We've seen Mr. Trek Ranks out there as well, and he's given us badges, so...
Jim Morrison.
Jim Morrison.
Jim Morrison's the guy. Jim Morrison.
I mean, that would have been cool too.
Yeah. If I ever met, if you ever met Jim Morrison, you'd hope you'd get a badge from him. It'd be amazing.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Rick and myself managed to get some great photos with some of the brilliant cosplayers who were out in force today. Some amazing costumes, some great really Borg costumes, and we saw a really cool Breen.
Borg.
And there was like a kind of I think she was like a sort of a mirror universe Data.
Yes.
Like a Dark Data.
Mm.
What was the girl's name?
I can't remember. But she's on Twitter as something Wrong Sun, Often Wrong Sun, or something.
Something
similar to that. Right. If you're listening, very sorry, don't get it exactly. But
we've all come back. Put our phones on charge away from where we are as well. We can't even check.
Yeah,
because the Mirror Universe Enterprise comic is it's very well received, but it's got it's not super well known. I don't think it's got all the Enterprise people are super. There's definitely a gym on Mirror Enterprise D.
Yeah,
she was great. Mirror Universe Tilly, she was cool.
Yeah,
she held a knife to my throat and stabbed you in the stomach. Girl.
Yeah, so. Very kind of her. we saw a Klingon and a Borg dancing together.
They were doing they were doing some light opera, weren't they? Dancing to Gilbert and Sullivan.
That was a lot of fun.
I think that cosplay is an important element of these events. People seem to really enjoy it. They seem to put a lot of time and effort into making their own costumes. I've acted as a moderator, admin, or whatever you might call it, on a Destination Star Trek Facebook page for several months, and I did contact a few people on there to ask them to meet up with me and just tell me their stories. What does Star Trek mean to you?
Mm-hmm.
Why you're here? Why you're dressed up as who you're dressed up as? You know, what has it made a difference in your life? You know, I think we've all got these stories about Star Trek, or maybe about other shows, you know, people like The Walking Dead, people like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, people like all these shows, you know. If that's not going too off topic for 10 backward, but
we don't normally bother about going off topic.
Yeah, we usually maybe only 50% on topic most of the time.
But I think people have got genuine, heartfelt stories about how Trek's changed their life, or how any of these TV shows have changed their life. And I'm keen to try and speak to some people tomorrow about that.
A really broad spectrum of people there too, I noticed. And one thing I thought was super cool is that there were lots of kids there, but you might expect kids to be dressed as someone from Discovery, but the kids are dressed as Seven as Nine, Akira I saw, and so it's clear that they're not just connecting with new Star Trek there.
Well, I would hope not. There's cussing on there.
Yeah,
and then
but I mean, to watch that.
It seems like I think Star Trek Beyond Netflix is a big help.
Absolutely, yeah, it's just right there and it's so much more accessible now.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, it's just a friendly environment, very inclusive, and just kind of nice. Like it's busy, but you know, everyone pretty much gets along.
Yeah,
I haven't witnessed any brawls.
No, I did hear some shouting at one point, but
it could have just been rowdy Klingons. I think you're right though. That does add a real kind of atmosphere to the whole thing when you see people in cosplay, and it's just great when you go and we found that we needed to take breaks occasionally and go and sit in a pub and have some quiet beers and talk to people. But again, I think as I said in the podcast yesterday, one of the great things is just looking around and just seeing all of the people in costume around you, and it just feels like you're in another world. You're in that world of Star Trek.
We did partake of the costume scene today. Like we all, myself, Will, and Rick went in original series uniforms, which was great fun. Hopefully, be some pictures have gone up on the website of that soon.
Yeah, that'd be great. We got bridge photos done on the original series bridge.
Yes,
that was pretty exciting.
Yeah, it was pretty great. We just got to take a turn in the captain's chair. So yeah, that was a joy to our geeky little hearts.
Oh yeah, definitely. Cool.
When you guys were on the talking to the authors, what was that like? Is it different to kind of how you might interact with actors? I mean, what sort of connection is there between the books as part of Star Trek? Does it feel sort of separate, or does it just feel...
Actually, it was really interesting, because I think in the past it has been quite separate. But with the new Discovery novels, Una McCormack and James Waller were saying that this is the first time that they've started taking what the authors have written and some of the narrative they've constructed, and they've used that in Discovery TV show. So it's been the books influencing the TV rather than the other way around.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And I don't think that's necessarily happened before.
I always wonder if there's an issue with kind of... Because I know that, for example, Tom Paris' character is essentially Nick Locarno, isn't he?
Mm.
And for all intents and purposes, he is. But he's not, because if he was Nick Locarno, they would have had to pay the writer who wrote that script of that episode.
Yeah.
So is that still a thing, do you think? I imagine it must be frustrating if somebody writes a Star Trek book and there's a character in that engages with people, and perhaps that character couldn't potentially, especially if it's in a Discovery book, transfer into the TV series because of stuff like that.
I did comment about I think a lot of the authors write together a series of books, and they did comment on how they were teasing each other that the person that's last in the series is, I can't remember how they put it, but basically got the raw end of the deal, because they've been left with, they've got to follow all the you know, the stories that the other people have started, as where people who started, you know, had a bit more free rein to do what they wanted. So I guess there are some limitations. But it was really interesting hearing from them and hearing about projects that were upcoming and previous books they've written about and how authors interacted, how they interact with the TV shows and the writing process.
Cool. And we did get to have a bit of a chat with Una McCormack, particularly. Got some books signed, which was nice. I got to talk to her about one of her previous Star Trek books, Hollow Men, which follows on shortly after In the Pale Moonlight and deals with Sisko and Garrett going to Earth, and Sisko's got this got the instance of from the Romulans weighing on him. Meanwhile, Bashir's got the recent revelation of Section 31's existence weighing on him. I just loved how it brought all these sort of bits at this key point and sort of gave them a bit of bit more depth than the series was able to flesh out in the episode that they had. And then she said, did you see it was the Italian Job? What? Because I hadn't seen it was the Italian Job, and that sounds excellent. And now I can't stop thinking about Garrick and Bashir driving minis all around.
Is there, is there a bit in the book where Bashir says, you're only supposed to blow the bloody doors off?
Sadly, I don't remember it, but...
That's cool. Yeah, it's cool when you can have that engagement with someone.
It is. Mm-hmm. I had already badged her on Twitter about how great that book was as well. So this was just to prove the point. I'll track her down and say it to her in person as well.
And where was she to be found? Was she on a merchandise store?
So following the author's talk on the Excelsior stage, they had a part a bit further down, about halfway down the hall, just opposite where the photo areas are. I think that's it.
That's right.
So she was there as a seller as well.
Her and James Swallow were both sat at the desk doing signings. They were next to a store that was selling some of their books.
I see.
But I don't know if that was just more. I don't know if they were connected or affiliated with that seller or not. But,
I guess even if they aren't, they still get a cut, so to speak, royalties.
Yeah. So yeah, that was a good day.
Was that a book you brought with you?
No. I did scour my attic for my old copy of Hollow Men to get Una McCormack, but unfortunately I've had a couple of house moves since and I could not lay my hands on it in time. So I've got a new book. But yeah, also I have a new book to read.
So anything you guys are really looking forward to tomorrow on the last day?
Well, I mean, two separate occasions today I've gone and lined up for a photo with Nichelle Nichols, and unfortunately she was unable to attend today. They're not sure about her ability to attend tomorrow. Obviously I hope she's going to be okay. I completely understand that she's flown out from America. It's not an easy flight at all, and you know she's not young, so I'm just like, what am I going to do now? So I'm thinking changing my op, my photo op, and seeing about someone else. Yeah. I was initially thinking I might go for Worf and Troi, but after watching the DS9 documentary, I'm in a really DS9 mood, so I might change that and go and get.
It'd be cool to meet another visitor. If I was going to meet someone else, to get an autograph, Nana visitor, not Nana. Nana visitor would be. Cool. She seems really nice.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, Terry Farrell.
Yes, Terry Farrell. Mm.
And does Rick want to mention Nikki DePur?
I got a photo of Nikki last time, so I think I'll try and get some other ones. But
Mary Wiseman as well.
Yes.
Discovery.
Oh yeah.
You want to leave the Discovery ones for later.
Well, yeah, because you feel like they're going to be around for a long time. They'll be doing the conventions for a while, hopefully.
Mm.
Yeah,
hopefully.
Yeah.
Have you talked much about Discovery on this podcast?
Yes,
I imagine you've spoken quite a bit. But I mean,
when it was launching,
I popped into the Discovery panel thing today. There was, I think, 10 of them there.
Yeah.
So,
by all accounts, it's a pretty big,
large number of people from the show. They said something about, you know, a lot of Star Trek gets to about 7 seasons. I think the average arc for a general TV show is about 7 seasons, if I'm right to say. they said, where do you sort of see things going at season 7, or where do you think people will be? And young Sam
Bartholomaeus
said, I'm going to come back to life.
Excellent.
I'm going to reap my revenge or whatever. Mm-hmm. Exact my revenge on who killed him.
In the Prime universe, he was sucked out when there was a hull breach.
Yeah.
During the Battle of the Binary Stars.
Was it Seneca Green?
She was.
Yeah.
If you want
that,
to
that's who he was going to exact his revenge.
Going to blame Burnham for the Blade War stuff.
It was Michael Burnham. Yeah.
In the Mirror universe, it was Burnham, but he attacked her first.
Yeah.
So, you know, put that on himself.
And where can we see Discovery getting to? Do you think it will get to 7 seasons? I mean, that first season, as much as I did complain about it at times, in the second half of that season it really got going.
Yeah.
You got the whole Lorca arc, which was phenomenal. Mm. I don't think many people saw that coming. The whole thing with Shazeef Latif playing Vok and help me, his name?
Ash Tyler.
So I mean, those two acts in themselves phenomenal, really. And again, as with Deep Space Nine, but taking it a step further, you've got this serialized Trek where you've got to watch every week. There's no reset button. Every week goes on and on and on and progresses. It's suitable for binge watching, as they said, isn't it? On Netflix. This is the perfect platform for it.
I think it's got a lot of potential. And watching the DS9 doc, a lot of the challenges the writers faced with that show was that it wanted to do serialization and the people at the studio weren't so sure about that.
Mm.
Whereas now it's not serialization, it's fine. Mm. So it's with DS9 it was serialization that was the kind of challenge and the issues that they wanted to talk about with that. And now it's not serialization, but I would say it's just getting good stories in, because there must be so many ideas when you have a writer's room.
Mm.
And I know that the writer's room for season 1 probably wasn't the best environment, because they've got rid of the two people in charge of it, haven't they?
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah.
So there's a new people in charge of the writer's room. I think if that provides a good atmosphere, that's good. That's a good for the show. And also I think having Anson Mount as the captain character in season 2 is probably a bit better, because his character will be a bit more warm and engaging than he won't be an antagonist like Lorca was.
Yeah.
And it will kind of Discovery was always at its best when the entire main ensemble of the crew clicked.
Yeah.
And I think as long as they have that, I think it could go as far as it wants, really. And
there's
plenty of talent there. And in the writing and in the acting and in the, you know, in all of it. So it just needs the I think it's got a lot of potential. It just depends on how those three areas kind of click, I guess.
Plus, it has shorter seasons than Trek has in the past, so even if it gets a set to 7 seasons, it's still half the number of episodes of, say, TNG,
I was just about to say. With 13, 14, what, 15 episodes per season, it's quite a bit shorter than those 24, 25 episode seasons, isn't it? But it could run and run, couldn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Conceivably, too.
Budget-wise as well, managing the budget of the show. I think a lot of the budget in season 1 of Discovery got used pretty early on.
Mm-hmm.
That was part of the reason that the people got moved on from who were in control of it. And I think the finance for seasons 2 might be different. I think Netflix put a lot of money into it
for
season 1. I don't think they're putting as much money into it for season 2. So, I think that really I haven't seen anything that would make me think that it can't go far. It's more how they run, really. Mm. How the behind the scenes people work with the in front of cameras people.
Yeah.
And the
Speaking of sort of the finances behind it, obviously Netflix is financing a lot of stuff. They've probably got quite a lot of money to put into this sort of thing. Having said that, would, as it has done with other big TV shows that have run, like, for instance, Friends and The Big Bang Theory, those series seem to have ground to a halt at the point where the salaries for the actors became impossible to meet. Do we think that this ensemble cast of quite a few people, there's at least 12 of them, isn't there? You think that could become an issue in the future?
I think much as I say, I don't think Star Trek has quite the reach of a show like Friends or things. So I don't think they'll ever be considered in the same way. So they will. That the network would ever be that willing to chuck millions of pounds at their stars and that, or dollars, they might prefer to be paid.
I think perhaps the cast they've chosen probably don't expect to get paid that much. I think what you've got there is maybe a couple of people that we've seen elsewhere. Jason Isaacs, obviously a big name. Obviously Doug Jones, a big name.
Michelle Yeoh.
Michelle Yeoh, yeah, of course, yeah, but she won't be getting more pay, will she now?
Well, she's
still in the Mirror Universe.
She's in the Prime Universe.
Oh, she's in Mirror she's in the trailer for Series 2.
So oh, well, there you go. But she's only a guest star. She might make like 4, 5, 6 episodes, maybe. Yeah. So they keep her cost down. But I think if you look at people like this in Trek, I think you've probably got less well known stars, and I think that's great because you don't necessarily want the known faces on the Enterprise. You want to sort of grow with the characters, learn them, and start to enjoy them for who they become. Not a face that you already know, perhaps.
Yeah, I think it's dependent on the people, isn't it? On the actors and how their careers go. I mean, I think now it's not a trajectory for an actor would be from TV to movies, and now it's. No, it's more fluid. I think you can go back and forth between them, can't you? I think budget-wise, budget for the visual effects is probably the big drain on resources for a show like Discovery.
I'd say one danger that Discovery might have is that like really expensive shows tend to be ones that are cancelled because not necessarily because they're not getting the viewers, but just because they're so expensive to produce, they've got to do incredibly well to make it worthwhile. So that could be a risk with Discovery because it is such a lushly produced show.
Yeah, and it's kind of the tempo for CBS's new streaming service, isn't it?
Yeah,
launched last year, and I guess.
Of course, I've been thinking about it being Netflix. Of course, it's CBS. Yeah.
Like I was saying before, I think Netflix did put a lot of money into season 1, and I think it's less this time around. So I think if anything, I don't think it'll be the quality of the show that is the kind of Achilles heel of the show, if there is one. It's money.
Yeah, but fingers crossed.
Yeah,
we'll keep going and Cool. I guess we should. It's getting late, isn't it?
It is getting late. Yeah.
We should round up and finish.
Destination Star Trek 2019 has been announced, hasn't it?
They are saying it's going to be one next year. I think they might give some solid details out tomorrow.
So yeah, I would say if you've not been to one before, you're thinking about it, do it. It's a lot of fun.
It is.
Maybe go with some buds.
Yeah, save up some pennies.
Or alternatively, if you haven't got anyone to go with, reach out to people on Twitter or social media, and meet up with everyone. There's loads of people that are willing to meet up with people, and even if you're on your own or to walk around with you. Yeah. So you don't have to be on your own. You don't have to be with a group of people that you already know. There's plenty of options.
Yeah, it's a great place to meet like-minded people.
We met Rich and two guys called Rich and Ross. Ross is Ter Borg.
He is.
They're really good, really nice guys. He's very friendly and personable, and it's just immediately we went to the. There was the Wetherspoons at the NEC, which, yeah. which is, you know, it was brilliant.
It was a godsend. It was a great place to retreat.
And it was great to just go there and get a beer and just chat about Star Trek.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
There was a brief conversation whilst we were at the Wetherspoons along the lines of, I think it was Ross who mentioned it, why aren't they providing drinks, food, whatever, possibly not in the main hall where we are, but at least on a side hall or just a space. I mean, that hall's massive. There's more space there.
Yeah.
They could be making some more money, which they seem to be not really capitalising upon. The Quark's Bar could have been serving drinks. If they've got a license to do it,
that would have been amazing.
Some sort of food sort of thing could have been going on.
I guess they'd have to. It would have to be. It'd be the next level of planning, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Because it was really busy today, and fair play to the staff and the people working there. They did a pretty good job, but you can imagine it's tough, isn't it? It's tough work, and I think it's a great idea, but I imagine it would make Destination Star Trek more expensive.
Maybe, but then I think they'd make a lot of money.
I think at the moment they probably don't do it because it kind of works as it is. There's not the need there.
This is only the second time it's been at the NEC though. It's been in London before that, wasn't it?
Oh, okay.
I think they did a 2014, a 2012, the Excel perhaps. They've done 16 and 18 at the NEC. I did consider after 16 setting up my own Mirror Universe con. Upon giving it a moment's consideration, I did think it might be slightly tricky. You've got to think about the planning of this event. Mm-hmm. I didn't see any, but you've got to assume at some point there is some sort of medical staff on site. If not the NEC's own medical staff, then it will be, won't it? But I mean, the parking's a massive thing, but that's already sorted, I guess, by the NEC, 16,500 spaces. The food's already there, I guess, as well. But I mean, just imagine getting that army of volunteers, and they are volunteers, they're not getting paid.
Yeah.
Just to sort of corral people into the right place and all the sort of things. I saw some major improvements over 2016. I'm sure you did too, Rick.
It's definitely a step up from 2016. Yeah. So we don't know what next future years will hold if they keep improving and improving. There might be all sorts of new crazy ideas they come up with.
I'd really like to see Quark's Bar being staffed genuinely by the Ferengi characters of DS9 in full makeup, just awesome. Actually working all day.
And then Dabo with
but I imagine the food and drinks there would be really expensive to fund that.
I did quickly stand on Quark's Bar, took a photograph, and sent a tweet to Aaron Eisenberg and Armin Shimmin saying, when you're ready, boys, it's time for your shift. I did not get a response.
Oh, cool. Right, should we wind up the recording there, I think? And we're... we'll be back in the future with another podcast.
We will indeed. And,
cool.
Thank you very much for listening.
Yeah, cheers.
Thank you. Take care. Bye.
Yeah.
Bye.
Cheers.
Bye.
Cheerio.
Do you realise how incredible this is?
A British tradition.
You ever noticed her bum? What? Her bum.
Oh, no.
Enough of this self-indulgence.
Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. If you want to get in touch with us, our website is www.lowerdecksradio.co.uk. You can reach us on the Twitters at 10backward, 10 being the number and backward being the word backward. We're also on Facebook at www.facebook.com/10backwardpodcast. You can also email us at crew@lowerdecksradio.co.uk. On a personal, individual level, my Twitter is @WiltHerland. Rick Everson's Twitter is @TrekFanRick. And Rick Palmer's Twitter is @MrImhotep.
Hi, thank you again for listening to the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, you might consider supporting us. We now have a Patreon where people can pledge small amounts to fund ongoing projects like... keeping our website up to date, new audio equipment as we're going along, and potentially opportunities to expand our content. You can go look at this at patreon.com/lowerdecksradio. If you don't feel you can donate but would still like to support us, we would love it if you could subscribe to us on however you get your podcasts, through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or we're on various third-party apps. And if you could leave us a review on any of those, that would be fantastic and would be very appreciative.
Thanks again for listening, and please tune in for more podcasts from the 10 Backward crew.
Let's make sure history never forgets the name.
10 Backward?
Laddie, don't you think you should rephrase that?
10 Backward. 10 Backward.